This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Leyland. We're continuing with your questions. Radio program at AOL.com, the destination for same. And so we have a question about iron overload, right?
Yes. This is from Joel. Greetings, Dr. Hoffman. I've enjoyed your program with always interesting and insightful guests off and on for many years. Thanks for sharing the wisdom. Many years ago, you had an interesting guest who talked about the problems of accumulation of iron in blood and tissues. Are there any resources on this iron accumulation that you can point to? What is the danger of iron accumulation?
Well, thinking about it, I can't remember a guest who specifically addressed that.
Yeah.
It's a good theme, but, you know, keep in mind that I've been doing this show for like 32 years now, maybe 33 or 34.
Wow.
Yes, it's 1988, so, you know, 33 years, mm-hmm. Starting this year. And so we do about 50 to 100 interviews a year. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot. That's like 1,000.
Right.
You know,
right, exactly.
Thousands possibly of shows. So forgive me if there's some lapse. This is a pervasive problem.
Sure.
We see iron overload as being genetically programmed.
Mm-hmm.
There is a residual gene that some of us continue to have that was a hedge against what was very common only a few centuries ago, which is parasites.
Mm.
We used to say, well, it was because of sword fighting, you know, like combat and like, getting...
Swashing and buckling.
Swashing and buckling, right? And also, you know, Errol Flynn and, all those sword cuts that you would lose blood. Or that it was the wild animals ravaging us. But actually a more prosaic cause of chronic anemia in humans has been parasites.
Mm.
And we only seem to have, gotten the edge on parasites in the past few centuries. If we actually look at remains of, say, medieval or Dark Age people in the UK, the analysis shows they all had parasites. The peasants, maybe less so the royalty, and the nobles, but they all suffered from chronic iron deficiency. So they evolved genes to promote iron retention. Well, that doesn't, you know, like many adaptations that were good for the Ice Age or the Stone Age, not very helpful in modern life because we don't have opportunities to bleed. Women do up until about, 50.
Up until menopause, right.
And then they tend to accumulate iron like men, but they have a head start in terms of getting rid of excess bodily iron with childbirth, too. That's another way that they lose iron. So a fairly high percentage of, I think it may be, a high single digit or low double digit percentage of people over accumulate iron.
Mm-hmm.
And the solution for that is to...
Give blood.
We had an interesting case of a guy who has kind of a high level of iron.
Yeah.
But he's had COVID. Mm. And I suggested that he give blood because giving blood, they're going to extract the valuable plasma, the convalescent plasma.
Yeah.
And so it will be both selfish and altruistic at the same time.
There you go.
Double whammy.
Now, a high ferritin level, which is a storage form of iron, is also a marker of inflammation.
Right. So you can get a
a spurious elevation yeah. of ferritin. So some people, oh my God, my ferritin's high. Well, if you are in an inflamed state, sometimes it can be erroneous.
Yes.
And you have to be a little discerning reading these blood tests. Like ferritin's yeah. usually the marker we use.
Right.
But then we have to use like iron and total iron binding capacity. And then sometimes we do the genetic test.
Right.
For
I forget the
hemochromatosis, HFE something.
Thank you, yeah. HFE, right.
Yeah,
right.
And that's a test that's now available in labs, mm-hmm. and you can establish whether you have it. Now, it comes in two copies, and if you have just one copy, you might be a little prone. If you have two copies, you're in trouble. There are a lot of women who have one copy, and they never have a problem because they're women.
Yeah.
Men are more prone to problems with excess iron. So what are the right. problems with excess iron? Iron's a prooxidant.
Yes.
We like antioxidants. It's a prooxidant.
It can be toxic to the heart.
We call it cellular rust.
Yeah. Rust, exactly.
Right. You toxic rust. To the liver, toxic to the heart, toxic to the brain.
Yes.
Iron accumulates in the brain. You know, iron's an interesting thing. It's one of those Goldilocks things. Too little.
Yeah.
And you can't think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like young girls who are on a very skimpy vegan diet, and they menstruate, and they are given the label of ADD. Well, they actually have low iron.
Yeah.
Because they don't have any dietary sources of iron, and they're losing blood. On the other hand, too much iron will damage the brain.
Yes.
And usually takes later in life. That usually occurs. It's a cumulative effect over right. decades.
Too much iron will also feed infection.
Too much iron can feed infection, yes.
yes.
So people with, one of the reasons why we're not keen on people taking iron orally
yes.
when they have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, they may have bacterial overgrowth and we may be feeding the bacteria
right.
with the iron.
Right. But it's pretty easy to take care of the problem. Of course, you want to investigate if it is purely inflammation to tackle the inflammation. But if it is a matter of too high iron stores, go give blood.
Yeah, it's right. And well, is it reasonable to restrict your iron intake? Possibly, yes.
You could
go a little lower on your iron sources.
Go lower on your iron sources, or have a cup of black tea.
You know,
which will inhibit the tannins in the tea will inhibit the absorption of iron. For
interesting sideline on that is that there was a little bit of a pandemic of iron deficiency among Israeli children at one point, because it was thought that if the kids needs a bottle, give them some tea in the bottle.
Babies.
These were like the children of refugees from Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
You know, and I know my grandfather used to love a nice glass tea. That was like, he was a tea drinker. I don't think he ever really drank much coffee. He drank tea. In a glass with lemon and crystal sugar.
Oh, okay.
the crystal kind of sugar. Uh-huh. And that was his thing. So, you know, that Polish guy, you know, the immigrants brought that tradition to Israel, and they found
yes.
that the black tea interfered with iron absorption mm-hmm. in these children.
Yeah.
So not, you know, it might actually be beneficial if you want to prevent iron.
Yes, yes. So for any of you whose iron is too high and your doctor told you, don't eat steak, and you really want to eat a steak, have a cup of tea. and don't take any vitamin C with that high iron meal, because
right.
the vitamin C enhances the absorption
right.
of the iron. But the tannins in your black tea will help to
bind.
Block it.
It binds it
will
or blocks it.
It,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, there you have a little mini exposition of the issues around that. And then, you know, frankly, if you look up iron overload or hemochromatosis, it should be fairly easy to see a lot of scholarly articles on that. You know, I just Googled it and I see like a ton of articles
mm-hmm.
on, you know, from the usual sources. There's even something here. I'll point out this one. There's a whole website called irondisorders.org.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go, irondisorders.org.
It can cause what's called bronze diabetes. You ever hear of bronze diabetes?
No.
It's you get diabetes and your skin is bronzed because you have so much iron.
Wow.
Yeah.
I only see that in like Addison's disease, well, that glowy suntanny.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Bronze diabetes.
Bronze diabetes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
good point at which to pause, because we want to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share some vital information with you.
Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make this program a possibility for you because they underwrite it. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
Greetings. This is from Jill. Do you have any intelligent thoughts on COVID vaccinating after being COVID positive? I'm an RN that was infected a couple of weeks ago. Now I'm eligible for the vaccine. Should I wait 3 months, two weeks?
That's a really good question, and everybody's wondering about it.
Yeah, some recommendations say it's okay to vaccinate now. I assume no one knows for sure. What are your thoughts?
Well, what you just said is true. Nobody really knows for sure. And there is first of all, is it necessary? You know, because you've acquired
natural
immunity.
I mean, the logic, you know, you get antibodies after you've had it. The vaccine is meant to give you antibodies, but you already have the antibodies.
Right.
So what are we doing?
So what are we doing is we're not taking a nuanced approach to this. And that's, they don't want to introduce any kind of confusion or qualifications. It's like, everybody's got to get it.
Yep.
You know, period. And the reason they cite is that some people may not get complete immunity and the immunity may wane.
You still have to wear your mask.
Right, right.
Take the vaccine, but you still got to socially distance.
Right. So what I'm saying is, it from a natural infection, may not confer. So you take the vaccine as a hedge.
Yeah.
But
it's 95% effective.
Well, here's the other concern: is there is this thing called vaccine-potentiated autoimmunity that has occurred with other vaccines.
Yes.
Where people have already had a condition, got kind of a whiplash when they got the vaccine. It's like the vaccine made their bodies hyper-react and created sort of an immune system.
Your body said, wait, I did this already.
Yes.
Why are you slapping me?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that you've acquired immunity. And we don't have enough experience with that. We'll have to see. We will see instances like that where either people are fine or people will have adverse reactions.
Yeah.
But if I were that person, I would refrain from taking the vaccine until we have more data on what happens after you've had COVID.
Yeah. Wow. Jill.
I mean, it may be fine. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's something that needs to be studied, and it's going to take several months of experience to see what happens with that.
Jill, thank you for being a registered nurse.
Yeah, on the front lines.
Taking such good care of all of us. Thank you. And stay well and stay safe.
Yeah.
Thank you for that question. All right. Oh, this is a great question from Stan. I have an O2 saturation meter, but do not know the acceptable levels I should have.
One of those finger stick things.
What are they?
Called
a
pulse ox.
Pulse ox, yeah.
And I think along with a thermometer, you know, and a tongue depressor and a flashlight, these are items that have come into the realm of self-care.
Yeah.
You know, because if you get sick, I mean, the best thing is if you get COVID is please stay home. Please don't just go run over to your doctor's. Please don't come to my doctor's office when you suspect you have COVID.
No. First call your doctor
and let them
advise you on what to do.
And hospitals are equipped, you know, for intake of people who are sick, you know, through very protected portals, you know, so that you're not transmitting it to everybody in the hospital. But if mild illness should be treated at home. Yes. But what happens if you're just feeling really crappy and progressively crappier? And people have died at home of this. They've found people dead in bed because they perseverated too long. They're afraid to go to the hospital, or they're too weak to go to the hospital, and nobody to take them to the hospital, and they've just expired. Yeah. So how do you know that you're headed in the wrong direction? I mean, you may feel like you've been run over by a truck, but hey, I've had the flu, and it feels like
you've been run over by a truck.
You just feel horrible.
Yeah.
So you do the pulse ox, and if it goes below, 97, 98 is optimal.
Yes.
If it goes below like 95, 94, 93, you're losing ground.
Wow.
And so you can report that to your doctor, and your doctor can then, do a telemedicine with you and make a determination of whether you should show up at the hospital for more aggressive care.
So what is the margin of error on these machines that people may be using at home?
It depends. There's some are,
so people don't freak out.
Some are somewhat inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And, so there's some problems with that. And then they're not placed properly, or, maybe somebody has Raynaud's syndrome or something. You know, I wonder how they work with people who have scleroderma, who have very poor circulation of the fingertips. You could get a wrong signal. But that, let's assume that the thing is accurate and that you're using it correctly. I would look more towards trends because, I've applied it. Sometimes I go, oh, my God, it's like 95. And then I wait for a few minutes and it's like, oh, no, it's really 97, 98. So, don't freak out
immediately.
Don't jump the gun. Yeah. It's like,
oh, no, where's my ventilator?
Yeah, right. It helps to establish an objective baseline for how you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it's where you start out with. I mean, if you're like a really crappy breather. I mean, we have one patient who has very, very severe lung disease. She is...
Bronchiectasis?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she, on a good day, could be like 91.
Yeah.
That's where she is. That's where she lives. Mm-hmm. If your baseline is already a little lower due to chronic lung disease, it's relative. It's like, is it deteriorating from that?
Right. So, Stan, there's your answer. Thank you for that question. Stay well, stay healthy. Oh, this is from Susan. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you for the wonderful podcast that will continue to keep me healthy in 2021.
Woohoo!
That's so nice. Yay! An oral surgeon will be extracting a tooth in a few weeks. He's planning to give me an IV of antibiotics. Hmm. Will this be more or less damaging to my microbiome than oral or topical antibiotics?
Less damaging, because it is... You know, there's a word for, in medicine, how you administer medication.
Yeah.
There's enteral and parenteral.
Mm-hmm.
Enteral means directly into your digestive tract.
Yes.
And parenteral, sounds like parental, but it's
parenteral.
There's an extra ER in it.
Parenteral
means it bypasses your digestive tract. So
in a way,
that would be more beneficial. And it actually... It kind of makes sense, because what you're concerned with a tooth extraction is it goes into the bloodstream. The bacteria goes in the bloodstream. So you want to target the bloodstream, not like if you swallow some bacteria, not a big deal.
A big deal, because your stomach acid will probably,
Or the
kill
other
that
bacteria will get rid of. Will get rid of.
Like
yeah,
that,
they'll
right.
compete with it.
Yeah.
But in your bloodstream, So I have not heard that employed that often, but it is a suitable precaution, and it. I don't know what this person's circumstances are, whether they have a valve or they have like a joint replacement or some higher risk for a endocarditis or for some sort of bone infection or surface infection on a prosthetic joint.
Okay, so IV antibiotics would be...
I think under the circumstances would be preferable.
Yeah. Susan is also asking, are topical antibiotics less damaging than oral?
Yes.
So topical, to put it on.
What's interesting is, a frequently used topical antibiotic is something called minocycline, which is used for acne or even for rosacea or flagyl, topical flagyl, metronidazole. It's actually been shown that can affect the microbiome, even though it's not taken orally. It goes into the system
I see.
But not to the extent that the taking it as a pill would be. But it does get absorbed to some extent.
That's interesting. I mean, our skin does have its own microbiome.
Yeah.
So obviously it would be impacting that. But, you know, we absorb, for example, we absorb a lot through the skin. People are concerned, for example, about using aluminum pots and pans that they may get too much aluminum in their body. You get more aluminum from your antiperspirant, which you apply directly on your skin, than you are from that aluminum pot that you're worrying about. But use stainless steel anyway. I do. You know, that's the way to go. But that's interesting. We absorb a lot through our skin.
Right.
So, all right.
Apropos of the pots and pans, it reminds me that when people are have iron overload, you know, cast iron pans are great. I really like their cooking characteristics. But please don't use them if you have iron overload.
Yes.
I mean, if you have anemia...
If you have anemia, use a cast iron pan every day.
You'll get a little bit of iron.
Right.
You know, frankly, the newer ones are less leaching of the material.
Yes.
Than
the ones that are enameled are probably better.
Yeah.
Like a Dutch oven type. Or the enameled ones are probably better. You're better off than that. I mean, take that cup of tea and, you know, hope for the tannins to block it.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. I think we've reached the end of the line. We have a few more questions in the mailbag. We'll get to them next week. But radio program at AOL.com. We're happy to see that in 2021, the questions just keep on coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to wish you a safe and happy January. And we've got some interesting questions to catch up to next week.
Yes.
Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And thank you for your questions. Keep them coming.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.